Praise God. We're on another little short series on Jesus. And this time we're going to focus on the sermons of Jesus. And if there's anything most precious in the Bible, it would be the words of Jesus. And we know that there's four Gospels recorded of the life of Jesus. But if you look very carefully, there are not that many sermons in terms of his 3-year ministry. Not that many. And there are a lot of parables recorded in Matthew and in Luke. And but as far as sermon is concerned, there are some sermons that he preached to his disciples, like in the Gospel of John 14, 15, 16. But we want to look at some of the sermons that Jesus preached when he began his ministry. And those earliest would be where I believe his foundation, the foundation of what he expects our Christian life to be founded on. And that is the Sermon on the Mount, which begins in Matthew chapter 5 and ends in chapter 7. The Sermon on the Mount, and we want to focus on some of these wonderful teachings of Jesus because they are the basis. Now, if Jesus preached a sermon, isn't it interesting we have a sermon about a sermon? Why? Because there's no other sermon greater than the Sermon of Jesus. And we're talking about what Jesus talked and trying to understand the full extent of what he is speaking. The first thing to point out is that this sermon must have been very important because he repeated it possibly more than 2 times. But he definitely repeated it at least twice. Because here in Matthew chapter 5, verse 1 and 2, the place where the sermon was delivered was on a mountain. It says, and seeing the multitudes, he went up on a mountain, and when he was seated, his disciples came to him. And of course, there was all the other multitudes that were gathered together. Then he opened his mouth and taught them. So Jesus began his teaching. And hold your place in Matthew 5. Look over at the Gospel of Luke, where it looks like the Sermon on the Mount. The content is many times similar. But if you look at the place where it was delivered, it was a different place altogether. In fact, the context is a different place in verse 17 to 20 of Luke chapter 6. Just look at where it was delivered. He came down with them and stood on a level place with a crowd of his disciples and a great multitude of people from all Judea and Jerusalem and from all the seacoast of Tyre and Sidon, who came to hear him, and he healed of their diseases. So there were a lot of healing taking place in Luke. He healed them, and as well as those who were tormented with unclean spirits, and they were healed. And the whole multitude sought to touch him, for power went out from him and healed them all. So in the context of Luke, there was a lot of healing taking place, and it says in verse 20, he lifted up his eyes towards his disciples and said. So he spoke to them. And when you study them very carefully, you found that one is on a mountain, but another in verse 17, he came down to a level place. So it's a different place. And if you analyze that like we did on our notes on the life of Jesus, that it occurred almost at 2 different occasions. Now, there's nothing wrong with Jesus repeating his sermons, especially if they are very important. But the fact that we want to bring forth is that there's a strong case to support the supposition that these are 2 separate occasions. And the sermons being the way they repeated, which almost the same content, tells us that it must have been a very, very, very important sermon. And it is one that he delivers to the crowd. But we will take the one in Matthew chapter 5 to 7 as the key. And then we can do some comparison between Matthew 5 and the one delivered in Luke. Because they both speak about the same thing. And sometimes one gives light to the other. Now basically, we want to give you a very brief outline of this sermon that he has. And his introduction itself is contained from verse 3 to verse 12 of Matthew. So he starts by declaring all those conditions that are necessary to live the Christian life. This, if you want any teaching from Jesus directly about how the Christian life is to live, his Sermon on the Mount is it. That's it. That's where he tells us how to live the Christian life. So he has an introduction which lays the conditions by which our Christian life can be lived, from verse 2 right up to verse 12. And then he begins to compare what the believer in analogy is supposed to be. That is in verse 13 to verse 16. Using two analogies. The analogy of salt and then light. Then he moves into something very important at that time, because they don't have a New Testament. He moves into his understanding of where the Old Testament is placed in his time, in his dispensation. So he connects between what the Old Testament is trying to say from verse 17 right on to verse 48. He always say, you heard this, but this is what I say. You heard this, but this is what I say. So it looks at a different section of the sermon. When he starts saying, this is what you heard, or this is what he said, but this is what I say to you. This is what was said, and this is what I say to you. So he makes that comparison. By chapter 6, he moves into an extended teaching about the Christian believer's life that expounds on the analogy of salt and light, in a sense. And inside you'll find a glorious example of the Lord's Prayer. And that takes us right up to chapter 7 and verse 12. And in his conclusion, in chapter 7 verse 13 to 27, he tells us that there is a difference between hearing and doing. What a conclusion. They've just heard, but he says there is a difference between hearing and doing. Now we'll look more into some of these little outlines, but for today, we want to look at his introduction, which is, I believe, the most important section to digest everything else that he said. Let's read from verse 3 to verse 12. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Cross-reference to Luke chapter 6. And you find that Luke chapter 6 seems to be missing a few blessings. And look at verse 20. Blessed are you poor, for yours is the kingdom of God. Blessed are you who hunger now, for you shall be filled. Blessed are you who weep now, for you shall laugh. Blessed are you when men hate you, when they exclude you, revile you, cast out your name as evil for the Son of Man's sake. Rejoice in that day and leap for joy, for indeed your reward is great in heaven, for in like manner their fathers did to the prophets. And then he suddenly has four woes there in verse 24 to 26. which you don't seem to find in Matthew. So again, I express to you, it's two different sermons, but as you repeat it, there's a slight change. And so, in Luke, we find there is only four blessings, whereas in Matthew, we find eight blessings. Four blessings and one eight blessings, but then you find four woes. And the woes are interesting because they give you the picture of people who are not ready for Him. Now, many of us wonder, Jesus, I mean, we're talking about Jesus. He came, lived among men. Some accepted Him. We can understand many accepted Him. But can you understand the fact, this fact here? How come so many rejected Him? And if Jesus were to come again today, He will still be rejected. That is something that is remarkable. Especially to those of us who love Him so much. And who, I mean, if any one of us actually see Jesus and He manifests to us, I mean, many of us will run and kiss His feet. We could not imagine how people would love to reject Him and hate Him. And so Jesus gave the basis for all the Christian life and for all further spiritual growth. And that is that we can receive only in proportion to our ability to receive, which is our hunger and thirst level. Food is no good to you if you're not hungry. Have you ever had this, had a really good meal and you're so full? Perhaps it's Christmas Eve, you just ate a whole stuffed turkey. And you're so full, and I bring forth another special dish. Let's say, you know, Gwen's, what's that thing? Palova. You say, I can't take anymore. I mean, some of us sense what it's like when you're so full, no matter how nice the food is, you just can't take anymore. And Jesus is saying this, that our ability to receive Him or what He has is proportional to our internal hunger for Him. If there's no hunger, Jesus can come and you don't feel anything. But the more hungry you are for Him, the more you receive from Him. Almost like Jesus asked Simon in one of the houses in His ministry. And when the woman with the who had all this past background came and was washing His feet with her hair. And everybody was wondering why Jesus allowed that. And then He told the host, that whose name was Simon, and He says, you know, who would love more? One who sins greatly sinned or one who, you know, have little sin? And He said, of course the one who had greatly sinned, when their sins are forgiven. And He says, so is this woman. He says, I come to your house, you have not washed my feet, you have not done this, but look, she has washed my feet with her hair. And her tears are flowing out. And wipe them with her tears. Because of a great love for the Lord. Because she knew what it was to be forgiven. Against someone who is, you know, doesn't feel and understand the level of the forgiveness. So how much we can receive from Him. And these principles continue throughout our Christian life. If at any moment our hunger for God and thirst for God ceases, we are practically finished. Paul talks about the danger of being put on the shelf. And there needs to be this constant hunger. Now let's look at it very carefully. And as it says here of this condition, in verse 3 of Matthew, it says, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Now here when it says poor in spirit, it follows an expression of those who are humble before Him. The first condition